Welcome, Spartans. Welcome to Spartan Up. Today we got a great interview for you. Joe sat down with Bruce Babisham. All right, for those of you who don't know Bruce yet, he left the corporate executive world, executive leadership consulting, after 15 years. Highly successful guy. He left it for his true love, which was to coach boxing. All right, but this interview is more than just about coaching boxing. It's those life lessons we can learn from that coaching.
They got to be willing to fall flat on their face, which is hard in fighting because, you know, when you lose in a way in fighting, you lose in every way a person can lose.
Yeah, it's incredible. So Joe did the interview, but here we've got a panel. We've got a special panel today. We got retired Colonel Tim Nye.
Right here.
Got Johnny. We got Sephra the Seed Huntress. And we've got Isaiah Vidal. Isaiah is not a stranger to Spartan. Some of you will know him. We've actually done podcasts with Isaiah, but now he's on this side of the table to share his unique perspective.
And a TV star.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a TV star. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Yeah.
So, I mean, what we do here is, you know, we just try to give you your daily dose or weekly dose of grit and resilience. Just try to get you out there and get you gritty.
Be sure to stay to the end of the show, because after the interview with Bruce Babisham, Sephra, Johnny, Colonel Nye, and our special guest, Spartan pro racer Isaiah Vidal, will all be back, and they're going to talk about what they learned from Bruce Babisham and how you can integrate it into your life.
We are here for Spartan Up Podcast. I am with Bruce Babisham. Got that name right, right?
Correct.
And, you know, this is interesting because a lot of people have a tough time getting out of their life. What I mean by that is, you know, you go to work, same place, you stay in the same neighborhood, nothing really changes. You made a complete U-turn.
Right, right.
You went from running a very successful business to becoming a boxing coach.
Right.
Fairly normal?
No, unnormal. The way that kind of worked out was I had always had a passion for fighting and boxing.
You were a fighter?
I was introduced to boxing when I was a boy at the Silver Spring Boys Club.
Where is the Silver
Spring? That's in right outside Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And
how old?
9 years old. Okay. And back, usually, you know, you played football during football season, baseball during baseball, basketball during basketball. And then some of the other parents would come. There was a father who had a little boxing program. We had a great wrestling program, so I was exposed to all those.
Martial arts
and martial, all of it. Yeah. And we had karate in there. We had everything. But boxing was something I did. I identified with my father, and we used to go to fights together. And it was just something we would wait on, you know, Saturdays. I don't know if you remember Wide World of Sports. We would wait around, and hopefully that they would have a fight on. So it was a thing I connected with my father about. But when I got
what year was this? Would you say
this is? So I'm 56. So this was in the late 60s, early 70s.
Okay, so boxing was still, right now, MMA is big. Oh, boxing was big.
Yeah, listen, boxing was in its heyday back then. You know, boxing goes through ups and downs. And back then, you know, it was Ali. You know, I came up in the era of the Ali Frazier, Ali Foreman. So it was really at
it was a larger-than-life
larger-than-life guys. Yeah. And, I mean, think about how big Ali is today. When I was taking the train up here, I saw there's a big, what's my name, big, you know, documentary done about Ali. So. And actually, one of the big thrills of my life was when I was watching the entrance of the Olympic Games. You remember in Atlanta when Ali was the torchbearer?
Yes, I was there.
Yeah, I actually stood up in my house. That was such an emotional, you know, exciting moment. But so then I got out of boxing because I played, you know, football and baseball in high school, and then I played baseball through college. And then after college, I found weightlifting, and I was a strength conditioning coach at the University of Maryland.
All right, so you got a little coaching background.
Yeah, a little bit of background. But I've been all my life. My father was a coach. The men at the boys' club where I grew up were tremendous coaches and mentors to me. So I was immersed in that culture about how to design programs, how to incrementally bring an athlete along, you know, the importance of winning right and all those things. And I had the good fortune also having some great teachers. And then after college, I went into weightlifting, and I had a nice run as a. I only did weightlifting to meet girls, and I.
Did it work?
It worked pretty good for me at the time.
Nice. Did you get married because of that?
No, I didn't get married. So, and so, then I needed to do something to keep my competitive, to touch my warrior spirit. You know, I was going to go to work. I was going to make a living, and I stumbled back into the boxing gym. And the moment I did it, I didn't have any particular skill for it. You know, I was not a gifted athlete. I wasn't a gifted, you know, I was a good high school athlete. I was an adequate college player at a small school. Nothing tremendous when I walked into the boxing gym. I didn't have – it carried on. I was an average, decent athlete, but I understood fighting. So I had an aptitude for it. I understood what was happening. I had an eye for it, an IQ for it.
Is that rare? I mean, do the best coaches typically, were they the best?
That's a good question. So I think it's both, right? So if you look at like a guy like Steve Spurrier in football, he was a great football player, and he was able to translate that. But oftentimes, I say this to some of the athletes, you know, if you ask a fast guy how he runs fast, he'll say, I put my left foot in front of my right foot, and I do that, and I get there first. But if you ask a slow guy how to get faster, so when I was at Maryland, we had our coach, my boss, a guy named Frank Costello, who's one of the top speed coaches in the world, and he used to travel to Eastern Europe, and he brought back some of the new training methodologies that we've seen, you know, that are standard today. He developed a guy named Ronaldo Nehemiah, yep. Remember Olympian?
Yep.
And, he, you know, I used to watch him and kind of coach and teach. And he used to say how, you know, how hard it was to develop speed, and you didn't want to have fast guys teaching speed. You wanted to have slow guys teaching speed because they emphasize, you know, tried to emphasize on that. And if you remember, there's a guy named Valery Bortsov. Do you remember that guy
kind
from
of.
The Russian?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so they called him Dr. Speed because he broke it down. Anyway, so it's been my life experience, and for me only, I can only speak for myself, that my lack of ability made me work harder. My lack of ability made me pay more attention. My lack of ability.
You got to really understand.
Yeah, understand it. Right. So I had a general aptitude, a good aptitude for right. it, but I had to work hard for it. And I was the perfect level to be a sparring partner. So guys always want to – listen, if you're volunteering to fight somebody who they think they can handle – so I got tons of sparring work, right? So I'd go into every gym. Wherever I was, I lived in L.A., I was sparring. I lived in Chicago, I'd spar. I lived in D.C. And wherever I was, I'd go in and get work. But I was at least smart enough in one thing to keep my mouth shut and listen to their coaches. You know, so here I'm learning on the job, right. taking the beating. But I loved it. It wasn't hard for me. I loved doing it. It was like a thing for
You're
me.
Passionate about it.
But then I kept my mouth shut, and I would listen while they were being taught. And I just watched everything about it, and I sort of went through an informal apprenticeship, you know. And I would go into the gyms, and I would, you know, I'd be the guy that would.
An active observer.
That's a great way of saying it. I'm going to steal that from you. I was
That's
an
fine.
Active observer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I developed, you know, a base core knowledge, and then eventually confidence enough, because when you're a little older and young kids in the gym, they don't have anybody who's paying attention to them, because the best athletes and the best fighters are being coached.
Sure.
But the other kids aren't being coached, even though the coach would love to. He doesn't have the bandwidth, or she doesn't have the bandwidth. And so they would come to me, and eventually I said yes. So it happened very organically. And the moment I started coaching, I knew that's what I wanted to do with my life.
Sure.
But, you know, if you've ever been a coach, coaches don't make a lot of money.
No,
you know, coaching
no.
is at least in my business, coaching is a low paying gig. And so, you know, I tried to supplement that. Yeah. And I was in corporate America in a completely different world. I remember I used to go into work. I'd go to the gym at 6 a.m. and spar, put my suit on. They used to call me Bullworth, right? And I'd leave because the people in the gym, the socioeconomic bridge that I was traveling on a day-to-day basis was immense,
yeah.
You know, and it was actually an incredible experience for me as well, because I met some of the greatest, nicest, genuine people, you know, in the boxing gym and at the office, you know what I mean? And I got this idea about, you know, geez, being exposed to this, it's made me a better person. And then I worked in this consulting firm, and I was a successful guy in it.
Did you use skills from the gym to?
So when the business that we were in, we were senior level headhunters,
okay.
And we did executive search at the C-suite, VP, C-suite, and we built boards of directors. And I had the opportunity then to intersect with some of the best people in business, to interview them. We were paid. We were, I think, the fourth or fifth largest firm of our type. I was the managing director for our LA office. And so here I am intersecting with some of the smartest people in business. Yeah. And I was smart enough to keep my mouth shut and learn not just their businesses, but how they were leaders. Like, and so I would get this incredible education on a daily basis. And when I combined that with the education I was getting at the gym, both personally and what I was seeing, and what goes into being, you know, a warrior. So instead of saying, I'll say a warrior, what goes into being a warrior in business or a warrior in the ring, I had a really good education, a really good. And so
were you keeping,
I adopted
like a journal? Were you keeping notes on all this?
So you and I are in the journal nowadays because they put it on the computer. Yeah. I used to all the time take, I had a notepad, you know, one of the
yellow
notepads,
yeah.
And I would, you know, legal pads. Yeah. And I would just constantly take notes. I would constantly write things down. And I remember at one point I had 6 or 7 of these things. And I moved from L.A. back to D.C. And I remember having a short panic attack when I was unpacking because I couldn't find them. You know, and
this was your life's work.
Yeah, my life. You know, and I remember calling my mom. I said, what happened? You know, and eventually I found them. And I've grown since then. You know, I've continued to try and grow.
Sure.
But they were a core thing. So keeping notes was a big difference.
Sure.
Big deal for
sure.
me. You know, and so I use with my athletes now.
So now you got out of corporate.
Right. I got out of that primarily because just because you're good at something doesn't mean that that's what you should do. And listen, there are a lot of people which I envy that can grind out and be successful at things because they have a utilitarian approach to it. They want to make money.
Means to an end, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just not that guy, you know. And for me,
you want to do what you're
passionate
about.
While I was doing it, I wanted to do what I was constantly pulled to where my heart was, and my heart was pulled to this. But my heart, when I think about coaching, it's boxing that is my tool, but coaching is my thing. You know, saying, you know, so.
Got it. You feel you could coach other things too.
Yes. Like yes. Yeah. I read a book about Vince Lombardi one time, and they said he coached a girls basketball team to a championship, and you know that's when he realized that coaching sort of had this universal element to it.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly no Vince Lombardi, but I feel like what I learned as a boy in the boys club about programmatic design, about how to evolve athletes, how to evolve people, how to evolve sort of leaders, that all these things mesh together in coaching in a very unique way. And so while my sport, my silo is boxing, if I had the knowledge, you know, I could coach a baseball team, and I think I'd fairly be. The one thing I do know is if I have any skill in coaching, it's connecting. And I have a very specific, you know, way about, you know, there's 10 things I know about every kid I'll ever coach before I ever meet them. And even though I'm in a sport of boxing, you know, the very first thing is I tell the kids, you know, I'm not your friend. I'm not being hired by the promoters to be your friend, but I do love you. And I connect with them at that level. And I try through the program to, look, I'm only paid to win. You know, I mean, that's at the end of it. But to win, I have to get the most from the athlete. The way I get the most from the athlete is to connect with them at a very deep level, if I can, and to connect with them emotionally. And so I try and make, you know, I try and make them feel significant. I try, but all in a way where they don't get, it's easy today for kids. I think it's easier than when we were kids because they can put themselves out there so much. They can put themselves on social media, look at me, and they get accolades back. You know, they get followers. You know, if kids have hundreds of thousands.
You had to do a lot more work in the old days, right?
A lot more work, but it was also like for the kids, they get feedback that you and I didn't get. Certainly I never got. And so part of this whole thing is humility, right? So how do you get a kid, because I'm in a business where promotion is a large part of it.
Sure.
You know, how do you keep humility?
Yeah.
And at the same time you're promoting yourself out there. So, you know, I try and put a framework of, and I try my best to be somebody they can. I'm sort of sheepish about saying this. I try and be somebody that they can follow, somebody they can trust,
model.
A role model, right? You know, I'm the to the bed early guy. I'm the no drink, no anything guy. I'm a very straight guy for them. And I would probably be that guy anyway because I'm not that exciting a person. But generally speaking, I do that because I know that
they're noticing.
That's what they're noticing, and yeah. they're watching that in me. And I try and be that guy. I got all kinds of, you know, character flaws and weaknesses. But, you know, I make a conscious effort.
Why don't we take a 2-minute break? And I want to go through those 10 things. We're going to go out on the baseball field. I want you to turn me into a pro.
Sure.
Can we do that?
No, that's a big task right there, right?
Are you saying it's me?
No, I'm saying it's me.
Spartans, I'm Zach Evnish, the host of Spartan Way, with you every Thursday, and I wanted to share with you a brief message from today's sponsor, Shady Rays. I'm wearing my favorite pair of Shady Rays sunglasses, and I'm going to show you a couple of their other pairs. Thank you. And what's really unique and different about this company is their pricing is great. I've always struggled with picking up a pair of sunglasses for myself because I knew that I've been investing $150, $250 on a pair of sunglasses, I'm probably going to break them or I'm going to destroy them somewhere or lose them. Well, here's what's different about Shady Rays. If you break them or lose them, they will replace it free of charge. So if you lose it out swimming in the ocean or in the lake or you're out mountain biking or trail running, they don't care. They will replace them. Number two, here's what's really cool, is for every order placed, they provide 10 meals to fight hunger in America. And because they're sponsoring the Spartan Up podcast, they've got a special offer exclusive to our listeners. And that discount code is Spartan for 50% off two pairs or more. So if you order two sunglasses from ShadyRays.com, you guys are essentially getting two for the price of one. You can see we've got a lot of different styles, unique styles. I went with the one that reminds me a little bit of the Terminator. And you can get one for yourself and gift it to somebody else. Great sunglasses. That's not going to break the bank. And they're fighting hunger in America. ShadyRays.com. Use the code Spartan at checkout. 50% off when you order two or more.
All right. So it looks like I will not be a professional baseball player.
Right. Not by me anyway. Although I played college baseball.
But so is me. Is the problem.
That's right.
Let's talk about your 10 things. So all these years, you're juggling between C-level execs,
right.
Best of the best. You're listening to them, you're learning, you're in the gym, mm-hmm. and you came up with a methodology that includes 10.
Yeah, so it's not a it's something. So my attribute as a coach, if I would say that I have a part of my coaching that gives me
an
advantage, an edge, it would say that I have I have empathy. And I learned this early on because I am close to tears and I'm close to temper at all times. So when I'm in the you know, coaching, you might walk in on a Tuesday and leave thinking this guy is absolutely out of his mind. And then you might come in the next day and say, man, this guy really loves his athletes. That's the way I express myself.
That's your secret power?
No, but that's how I'm an emotional guy. And so for me, the most important thing about coaching is connecting, because there's a thing about people, right? So most people are afraid to find out that their best isn't good enough, and then that's what keeps them from becoming their best. If I'm trying to get somebody to be their best, then I got to get them to stretch themselves in every way.
They got
to
be vulnerable.
They got to be vulnerable, right? They got to be willing to fall flat on their face, which is hard in fighting because, you know, when you lose in a way in fighting, you lose in every way a person can lose. You lose a lot of your identity. You lose a lot of how you define yourself and how people interact with you. And you almost never lose it in private. You know, you lose it on the center stage. If you remember the movie Rocky, there's a scene in the movie where the night before the fight, he goes to the arena and he's walking in the arena, and all of a sudden he realizes, he hears his own footsteps, and he realizes that the ring is in the center of the ring in the arena, and he looks up at all the stands And he realizes that tomorrow night or the next night, everybody he knows, the entire city, right, we're going to be there. And he also knows that he's going to lose.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, that is it's actually the entire movie, by the way, the concept of, you know, of fighting even though you're going to lose and sort of carving out a piece of the world for yourself and having dignity. But that kind of thing in boxing, when you lose everything about yourself. And so...
So I got a question. Let's stop there for a second. So one of the things we like to say here is when you're trying to figure out your purpose, your why,
right,
the thing that you're passionate about,
right,
like, what is it that you would do anyway, even if you knew you were going to lose?
Right.
So clearly...
So that's a great question. So for me, a loss, it's not the same, but it hurts. So when my kids lose, it's a painful personal experience for me because we've gone on this journey together. For my athletes, you know, that's maybe the in amateur boxing, that's the most important teachable moment.
Right.
In professional boxing, it's a very painful moment, and oftentimes, while you can teach in it, there's a different element, and it's about money, and it's about career, and it's about, so you can lose a fight and lose a career. You know, in the olden days, you could lose a couple fights, but now, you know, they want undefeated fighters, or they want fighters with very low losses, so a loss can redirect your life in ways that you can't imagine, which means
the fighter becomes less willing to expose himself.
For some, you know, then that's my job, right? So a fighter loses, and then you have to figure out, okay, what do I have to do to bring this guy or gal back? I teach a lot of MMA kids stand up, and you know, the fist fighting compulsion. And I was watching when my niece loved Ronda Rousey.
I was just going to bring her up.
Loved her. Yep. And she would call, she'd say, Uncle Bruce, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And what about the fight coming up? And when Ronda Rousey got beat, I was paying attention to the news, and they were talking about bringing her back. And my niece would call me and say, what do you think? I said, this woman needs to be rebuilt. She lost, like I said, in every way a person can lose. And so they need to figure out how to rebuild her. And the way that you rebuild her is a process. They put the money in front of her, right? Whoever the powers that be, I don't know who the powers that be in the UFC, and I don't know what her management was telling her, but there was a process to bring her back. And I remember that she took a fight, and my niece called me and said, what's going to happen? And I said, I'm no genius. I said, but the moment she gets hit, she's going to go right back to that night. She hasn't been rebuilt. She hasn't gotten over the loss. And she got hit, and instantaneously, she went right back to that moment. That was a breakdown in coaching. I'm not being critical of her coach. I don't know this. I don't know the circumstances. But, you know, when you lose, when a fighter loses, so every kid loses. Some kids, what you pray for is the kid that loses, and you show up Monday, he beats you back to the gym. That's the kid you hope.
So in our little wrestling community for my kids in Massachusetts, a couple of the friends are national number three, national number two, 11 years old. So I said to national number two, Chewy, I said, what happened? You got second. He said, I didn't work hard enough. Man, that's a great answer. 11 years old.
First of all, wrestling is one of the great sports in the world. And I tell the story of a guy named Dan Gable.
Yeah.
And Dan Gable is considered one of the great wrestlers of all times. I always tell this story to my athletes because, to me, boxing, wrestling, karate, tennis is a very gladiatorial sport. But all of them are the same to me. There was a story where Dan Gable wrestled in the world championships. I'm not exactly sure. And he won. And then the very next year, he wrestled the same guy. And the previous year, he won by like 10 points. And this year, he won by like 6 points. And he was the champion and everything. And so after the event was over, a reporter went to go looking for him and couldn't find him anywhere. So he basically gave up on the idea of interviewing Dan Gable. And he walked outside. He saw this guy running around the stadium with his sweats on. And he realized it was Gable. And he eventually said, what are you doing? He goes, I beat that guy by 10 points last year. This year I beat him by 6. He's gotten 4 points better on me. I'm going to get a jump on him for next year. That, but think about like
that's
that
fantastic.
Being. Think about that guy yeah. and who Dan Gable is. I'm right. telling stories about him. That was 30 years ago.
Right.
There's a certain type of guy yeah. or gal
when you mix talent with yeah. that kind of passion,
and or drive and passion. Some of this, yeah. some of these athletes.
It's one in a million.
Yeah, it's one in a million. I mean, it's one of the cruel twists in fate, I think, where you have so much passion in a lesser skilled athlete. Because then as your coach, you can only do so much,
sure.
right? You can strategize. You can, we go to a fight with a game plan. But sometimes just talent prevails,
sure.
And there's nothing you can do about it. And it's so devastating because you really realize a lot of times deserves got nothing to do with it. And
yeah.
it's you have the minimum. You have to deserve it as you get up, but fate doesn't always repay you.
Yeah.
So you have to do the work. But even if you do the work, there's nothing.
Let's go down this road of rebuilding Ronda Rousey because
right.
I think there's a bunch of people out there listening that get knocked down in life.
Right.
So
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Forget about in the ring, and how can they rebuild themselves? What can we learn?
So it's hard. It's hard. And part of it is a process that you have to go through. They have to oftentimes when I was a younger coach, I'd have an athlete that would lose. I wanted to rush them through a process. You'd say something stupid. I would say something stupid like get over it. I was frustrated with their frustration. I was angry at them being angry. At some point, you may have to do that. You may have to, shake a tile loose and say, let's go. But other times, there's a process that they have to go through. They have to go through a grieving process. A lot has to do with their support system. Are they being supported? I don't know what they're a lot of these kids in MMA and in boxing, they don't have a tremendous family structure. And so they're left to their own devices to try and figure out. And most of them are young. Very young. We forget when we watch these kids fighting that they're just kids, a 19-year-old, 22-year-old, 23-year-old. When I think back at myself at 19, 22, 23 years old, I wasn't particularly a bright kid. I wasn't particularly emotionally mature. And here, my whole life has just been turned upside down. And everybody's walking up, Doug, get over it, get over it, get over it. Well, I don't know how to get over it. I don't know how to get over it. I just, everything that my entire Instagram where I get, 100,000 followers, now I'm getting bombarded. There's a boxer named Sergio Martinez, and he said one time when he won his world title, he had 1,400 messages on his phone. When he lost, he had 3, and one of them was his mother's. And he said, and so the process of rebuilding a kid is first letting him go through
the grieving process.
And then you have to rebuild them. You have to find what it is about their identity that they originally latched onto. What was it about them that gave them this core sense of belief in themselves? And you have to sort of try and reignite the fire. And it's a very hard process. A lot of guys and gals are never the same. They get it beat out of them. I don't know in all sports, because in team sports you have a rally point, and you also have the next week or the next season. So if you lose in football, I happen to also be a high school football coach, and you lose in football, we got next week to look forward to, and we just get over it on Monday. We're moving on. We've moved on, and we're focusing on the next thing. But in fighting, you may fight and not have another fight scheduled, so your life is limbo.
It's weighing on you.
Yeah, it's just
so,
in limbo.
So I think one of the things that you're saying is this grieving process does require you to just keep moving, do something.
Right, to be active, to come back into the gym, but not be forced. So some kids can respond instantly. And listen, there are some that lose, and it makes the fire bigger. They're the ones when you they lose on Saturday night, and you show up at the gym and they're waiting for you to get there on Monday morning. That's great. You don't have to do a lot of work there,
right?
But then there's the ones that you spent 2 years with. They lose and they don't answer their phones for 4 months,
right?
And they don't have any, and so you worry about them. And so every kid is different, every process is different, but that's where real coaching takes place too. You know, can you bring an athlete back from the brink? It's hard. It's hard, and sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't. In pro boxing, sometimes it's beyond your. Once you are, you know, nobody buys a dented suitcase, you know. So once you are damaged goods, you know, it's not only that you lost, it's how you lost. If you lost in a really good fight, people say, man, you're very exciting. Yeah. But if you get smoked, I'm not investing in you, right? And then you have to go even further back. So it's hard. It's a really hard thing.
So no easy quick fix.
No easy quick fix unless it's in the kid. You know, I wish I had magic. I wish that I had, after all these years,
a rebuilding pill.
Right. I could just say, let me start checking these boxes and we'll be back at it. For some kids, you know, like I said,
no problem.
And for other kids, it's a struggle, and that's just the way it is.
Three things. Let's go down rather than go through the whole 10. Three things that those viewers and listeners out there could use to, fight through life.
Well, three things. So I think for me, the most successful athletes, the most successful fighters, and we talked about this at the very beginning, make themselves emotionally vulnerable. And you have to do that.
Be vulnerable in life.
Be vulnerable in life, right? Be willing to find out whether your best isn't good enough, because that is where your limit is. You know, most of us will not find that out. Most of us, me included, are afraid to know that everything we define ourselves by isn't good enough. But of course, that's what keeps us from being our best.
All right. So be vulnerable. Expose yourself.
Right.
What else?
There's a thing on a wall in my gym called the law of outcomes, and basically says that the amount of pain, suffering, and sacrifice you must make must be in direct proportion to the size of the goal you seek to achieve.
Oh, I like that.
And
I like that.
A lot of people, and we live in this world, right, where you get fast money and you have, you know, you can lose weight in a week and everything is instant. But everything I know that is worthwhile accomplishing is hard, takes a long time, and most people won't get it done. And so...
So it's interesting because you're not only saying, which we always say and we hear every day, you got to work hard. You're saying make sure the goal is a big stretch goal.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. So you got to have a vision for yourself, right? And so... You know, if you're going to have a big goal, you need to understand that there's a price to pay for it,
right.
and it's the law of equitable exchange. We call it the law of outcomes. You know, if you are unwilling to suffer, if you're unwilling to put yourself through pain, if you are unwilling to deny yourself, success is an exclusionary process. It's not an inclusionary process. If you go up the ladder of success, you have to exclude more and more things from your life, and you're going to have to tolerate more and more things, which are pain and suffering. Commitment to the idea of being good at something is, and when you commit, it takes an incredible amount of personal self-sacrifice. And if you're unwilling to do that, you're going to be frustrated. You'll live in this place we call the betweenness, right? You'll live in a place where you're frustrated with your current status and station in life, but unwilling or unable to do the things to change it.
Sure.
And so you're stuck. Unless you are willing to suffer your way out of it. And I wish, you know, I wish that when I tell the kids, listen, I wish there was an easy path, but there isn't an easy. I haven't found it, because if there was, I'd be on it.
There is an easy path. It's out the door.
It's out the door, right, the street.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk about a personal level of commitment and be willing to suffer for your dream. And I've yet to find anything worthwhile accomplishing that doesn't require great suffering.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
All right. That's the second one, I think. Third one.
The third one. So I don't think you can – I think you can fool a lot of people, but you can't fool yourself. And so I think we try, too. We all play games with ourselves mentally, but you have to be true to – And if I have anything I'm proud of in life, it's that I did go to the thing that was true to me, the thing that I was a successful guy in every way, and in every way and every place but in here, right? So when I became, when I decided to go to fighting, you know, I had this fantasy that I was just going to jump from one ledge to another ledge. You know, I was here at this level, I'm just going to jump to this level. Well, I jumped from here, and I jumped all the way down here, you know, and that is very real. Yeah, and I had to go from the bottom. You know, when I started coaching, people weren't rushing to me to come coach them. You know what I mean? I had to coach amateurs with no talent, and I had to coach professionals who had losing records. But I had to hone my craft, but I had to work up, and it takes years and years. Put the time in. I had to suffer and sacrifice for my dream of coaching Olympians or coaching world champions. But the only way I know to do that is to be true to yourself, right? Sure. To be true to what it is, that thing, that vision that you have. And that is something I'm proud of.
So be vulnerable.
Be vulnerable.
Do the work. Stretch goals. And then be true to yourself.
I know that probably sounds like, what is the guy's name?
Tony Robbins.
Tony Robbins. I guess it sounds like a Tony Robbins thing.
I don't know. It sounds more like Bob Babichon.
That's right.
With that.
Right.
You're awesome.
Listen, man, thank you. That was fun. It's a pleasure and an honor.
That was fun. I'm just glad I didn't have to go in the ring with you.
There you go. Thank you.
So what did our team, Sephra, Johnny, Colonel Nye, and our special guest, pro Spartan racer Isaiah Vidal, think about all this?
Something that really struck me on that, Bruce talked about what makes him a great coach isn't that he was a great boxer. I'm sure he was a good boxer, but he said that he wasn't the best boxer out there. He had to learn. He had to train. He had to study. And you and I've talked in the past with your performance, and you're naturally one of the stronger athletes out there, physically stronger. You've worked awfully hard on that. Yeah, for sure. But you've also said that you're not naturally the fastest.
No,
you got these big, long, lanky guys out there. You won a stadium race today. A stadium race is the ultimate sprint. You got to go bloody fast. So I'm sure that resonated with you, the idea that you can teach yourself these things, and it's gonna make you better and stronger.
Yeah, and it's definitely something that I've had to learn in the years to come. And for doing Spartan racing for the last 8 years, I haven't always been the fastest runner in our sport. Like, I was always the biggest and the bulkiest athlete out there. I mean, I have at least 30 pounds on these guys. And for me to go from the perspective of how I started even running in the first place is literally I just got my butt and started running with cross-country runners.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I started. I just put myself out there to fail.
Yeah.
Because if I had learned how to fail, I got comfortable with it.
Sure.
But it's also a great thing to learn how to fail, because through that comfortability comes success.
Yeah.
And revenge is the biggest success.
For sure. Well, Tim, he talked about that. No, because you and I talked off camera about this, that the idea about with Ronda Rousey when she failed.
Right. I really liked the deep dive there into the psychology of losing, right? And then how do you bounce back from that? How do you rebuild yourself? You know, not all losses are catastrophic, right? I mean, sometimes, and I told this, the story I talked to you is, to bring it, my son's first high school wrestling match ever. Now, he'd been wrestling since he was a little kid. He was going to wrestle a two-time state champion on his very first match ever. And I said, look, you're good enough. If that kid makes a mistake, you can hang in there and capitalize on it. Don't worry about it. He came back after weighing and said, hey, Dad, great pep talk. Something did change. I'm now wrestling a two-time national champion. And I looked at him and said, okay, you're not going to win that, you know, but go earn some respect, right? So even though, I knew he was going to lose going in, and I hate to say it as a competitor, he probably knew it as well, right? That's not as devastating as when you think you're going to win, you're prepared to win, and you have to, and you lose something in almost a humiliating fashion, or at least in your mind it is, right?
But
there's
still
a difference there.
But still being willing to show up, right? You knew you weren't going to win against cross-country.
I literally
was
in middle school and high school. I would show up to these cross-country meets, and I would get my butt handed to me each time. I'd get dead last at some point. But there was one event that we had won, one of the district meets, and because I just kept pushing to the end, the other runners fall back, and I'm right there with them, and we're gaining points as a team, and we won as a team. That's the perspective.
Wolfpack.
You got to put yourself there.
Yeah.
And I wasn't afraid of doing that.
I think the really cool thing that this guy talks about, right, is as a coach and a role model, he says something that the pain and sacrifice that you give and put towards something has to be equally as big as whatever your goals are. And the thing that I've witnessed over the years that I've known you, and Joe's been a coach and role model to you, is he's like, you wanted to get better at this. And this story has been told before because you've been on the podcast. But he said, all right, well, come train with me. How am I going to get there? Ride your bike. And you did. And then just recently in Tahoe, just keep on pushing you farther. 24 hours in shipping container. Get in. And you did. And so you keep on doing that and listening to a coach role model, and it's taken you really good places, yeah?
Well, and when Bruce came to his three things at the end, and I think it ties into this, he said the first one is be vulnerable. Be willing to find out if your best is good enough. And so often we don't do things because what if we do fail? And he's like, actually put yourself out there, you know, whether it's, you know, in life, be rejected, be accepted, succeed, fail.
Right, but he also talked about, I like the other phrase you use there, is no one wants to buy a damaged suitcase. Right. So again, when you go back to losing, you got to fix whatever it was. You know, if you're going to stay in that game, whatever it is, whatever your area of expertise is, you've got to get over it. Right. It's much easier. And he talked about it. It's team sport. Team sport, there's a next play, you know, and you can kind of, they say a cornerback has to kind of have a short memory. You get over that losing repetitively because it happened. You only have to win or batter. You only have to win one out of three times. Yeah. So, but in life, sometimes it doesn't work that way. But you've got to train your mind that, hey, it's coming now, but what do I do? How do I handle that?
He also talked about being willing to put in the time as a passive observer, and sorry, an active observer. I love that he said he'd go to the gym and he'd hold the pads, he'd do whatever. So he wasn't being trained in that moment, but he was listening. So even while they're training this other guy, he's absorbing, he's listening, he's studying. And you think about how many chances in life that, you know, you're around a great salesperson, And somebody's talking to them, and you're tuning out because it's not, you know, listen to that person. Listen to that person. Always learn from people around you. There's always somebody around you who's better at something. In my case, there's always many people around you better at everything.
Speaking of better at something, all right, this one, you're obviously super good at this. I mean, have there been moments with coaches that you've run into that can maybe be helpful advice to other people that are trying to get up to your level where you are? I mean,
or if you would coach somebody.
Yeah.
How would you coach somebody?
Colonel,
obviously, like, take them from bottom. I'd take them from, like, the bottom to where I'm at. You know, you got to start everybody on the same playing field. So, like, if I was
baseline,
to take you, I would initially have a baseline training protocol.
It would be slow.
Trust me, it would be slow. I'd start you off, like, just doing push-ups, all body weight stuff. And then I would progress you forward to even the running mechanics. Because running mechanics are so important in the sport. If you're running all funky and trying to run fast, you're not going to get too far. At least with not, you want to have efficient running economy. And everybody probably knows a little bit about running economy. If you don't have great biomechanics in running,
not that much,
you can't gain the amount of time through space and through the short duration of time. So it's so important to make sure that your foundation is great, so that way you're, once you get to the top, everything's functioning properly.
You mean like having healthy, good soil that you can germinate?
Healthy, good soil, healthy foods,
strong
healthy everything.
Yes.
Everything.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. We do
such
talk
a good
about,
botanist
We do talk
here.
About, though, that the foundation is important. Exactly.
Foundation's important, yes.
Obviously.
It is, right? You can build the nicest building on a structure, but, you know, the hurricane or natural disaster comes in, and if it's not structurally sound built on that good foundation.
And what do we call that?
Bamboo?
We call that integrity.
There's a great quote that I know by Will Smith. He says, I'm going to take this brick, and I'm going to lay this brick as perfectly as this brick can be laid. Yeah. And if you do that a lot of times, you have a wall.
Yeah, for sure.
That's exactly what I do in my training.
You got a brick.
And just
exactly.
but on integrity, I think it's a great note to end on, too, is that the other point that he said is you can't fool yourself.
Yeah.
You can spend all your time trying to fool everyone else, but you know if you laid that brick perfectly or if you skimmed and didn't do it right. So
I've done that in training.
There's that integrity. That's the mirror, right?
Like, I'll get on a track, and I'll purposely get myself on a track versus a treadmill.
Yeah.
Because treadmills, you can get a good perspective of how you're training on treadmill. You get the proper speed. You get everything that you need. But on a track, it doesn't lie.
Yeah, sure.
Because I can run that thing, and it's 400 meters every single time. And if it's shorter than 1 second or, you know, faster than 1 second, I know that I'm getting the proper
time.
And
you've heard Henry Rollins.
And I can't fool myself there.
And the iron doesn't lie. 225 is 225 every time.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, hey, this is a guy who's put in the time. We've all learned from Bruce. Phenomenal guest. Really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot for being here. Make sure you're always here. We have great guests week after week.
Hey, Spartans, one more favor. We really had no idea when we started all this where it would take us. It seemed a little bit of a lark to stand around in a barn in Vermont and talk about resilience, success, nutrition, fitness, really the Spartan mindset and philosophy, the Spartan way. Over 400 episodes later, we're really proud of what we built, a partnership with you, our audience, learning and keeping each other accountable. So thank you for listening. We're starting a list of lessons from all 250 interviews. What are your favorites? Favorite lessons, favorite moments, favorite guests? Find us on Instagram at Spartan Up Podcast and let us know.
This episode of the Spartan Up Podcast is brought to you by Shady Rays Sunglasses, built for adventure. Go to shadyrays.com and use the code SPARTAN to get 50% off when you order two pairs of sunglasses from Shady Rays.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Spartan Up. If you have goals, we're here for you with daily tips to keep you on track and interviews every Tuesday with inspiring, motivating people. The only thing we ask of you is to push yourself and push your limits and to help us get the word out. We're on a mission to rip 100 million people off the couch and give them the tools to keep going. So please, tell your friends about us. Subscribe. Share it if you like this episode.